Welcome to the Times of Israel's Daily Briefing. Today is Thursday, April 4th, day 181 of the war with Hamas. Amanda Borchel-Dan here with our editor, David Horowitz, from our Jerusalem office. Hi, David. Thanks for joining me.
Hi, Amanda.
The global diplomatic fallout from the accidental IDF targeting of a World Central Kitchen convoy on Monday night continues. David will update and weigh in. Israel is awaiting payback from the targeted killing of a high-ranking Iranian officer in Syria also on Monday. What steps are being taken here? We will discuss the call for new elections in September from coalition minister Benny Gantz and the recessing Knesset. All this and much, much more when we're back.
The Technion Israel Institute of Technology is where some of Israel's brightest minds ask the biggest question of all. What if? What if they could take on the world's biggest challenges? What if they could develop life-changing environmental, scientific, health, medical, and technological discoveries that will make a huge impact on Israel and the planet? But they don't just ask the question, they answer it too. They turn those ideas into reality. They make them happen. To see just some of the incredible things they've achieved, get the Technion Booklet of Wonders at ats.org/wonders. We hope it inspires you to give them your support so they can keep doing what they do best. The American Technion Society. World-changing discoveries by Israel's brightest minds, made possible by you.
IDF Chief of Staff Herzi Halevi issued an apology for the deadly Israeli strike on three World Central Kitchen cars in an aid convoy in Gaza, adding that it was a result of a, quote, misidentification. The cars were targeted one after another by drone-fired missiles, leaving seven humanitarian workers dead. This is, of course, not the first strike against aid workers in the Strip. And in fact, some 15% of IDF soldier fatalities since the beginning of the ground invasion are due to tragic lapses in judgment. But this accident involving seven foreign aid workers is wildly detrimental to Israel's war effort. What are you seeing as fallout, David?
Well, first of all, it is a tragic event. It's another of the how could this have happened kind of events, of which there have been many, and of which the worst of all, of course, was October the 7th. How is it that Israel was so vulnerable? In this case, what's significant, I mean, one of the things that's significant is that this is an organization that is apolitical. This is an organization that rallied incredibly quickly to help Israel after October the 7th. You speak to civilian volunteers and the network of civilian assistance that launched into action, including with such basic things as evacuating people from the Gaza adjacent kibbutzim that had been so terribly targeted. People had to leave in large numbers. They were, you know, there was a government element in this, but there was a great deal of civilian assistance, including in feeding them. And they reached out to World Central Kitchen, and they'll tell you, they came right away. They had budgets, they had organizational skills that Israel simply didn't have. They delivered, I think, 2 million meals to Israel after October the 7th. And Israel's very, very, very critical of UNRWA, which is the UN's welfare agency in Gaza. It's Hamas-riddled and has wanted to marginalize UNRWA and has been increasingly coordinating with and relying on organizations such as, and maybe most prominently, World Central Kitchen. So these were people who were helping Israel to feed Gazans, who had helped Israel feed Israelis. And, you know, you watch the founder of the organization giving interviews and talking about, we were coordinated with the IDF. They knew exactly where we were. We were based in an area that was controlled by them. All our movements were known to them. So this investigation, which is underway, is going to I mean, by definition, it's going to be unsatisfactory because it's, how could this have happened? They're not going to be able to answer that question. They might work out who gave what order and what information they thought they had, but it's really, it's dreadful. It's dreadful on every level. And as you said, it's also very, very bad in terms of the way the world looks at Israel. Now, I read a piece in a British publication a day or two ago. Britain has been very critical of Israel. You know, there are precedents for the British army and certainly for the American army and considerably worse such incidents. You know, there needs to be an understanding that Israel is fighting a war against a very cynical terrorist army government that is embedded amid civilians to a degree that's, you know, unprecedented. As far as I can tell, it just means that Israel has to be incredibly careful. And that's what the Israeli leadership is saying. You know, we will investigate thoroughly. We will learn the lessons. And as Netanyahu has said, we'll learn the lessons to make sure that this kind of thing does not happen again.
Jose Andres, the celebrity chef who founded World Central Kitchen, spoke with President Joe Biden this week after the accident and asked him to force Israel to open more land routes. And as we're speaking, actually, the High Court of Justice is hearing a petition filed by 5 human rights organizations asking the court to order the government to allow unfettered entry of all necessary, quote, humanitarian aid, equipment, and staff to Gaza, especially to the north. So could it be that the court will override the government and the army in terms of opening up more aid routes into Gaza?
I have no idea what the court will decide, but the government's position will be there is no limitation. This is, you know, not what Israel was saying at the beginning when Netanyahu was talking about the minimal humanitarian aid to enable international breathing space for Israel to prosecute the war. That's changed. It's changed a lot in the last few months and weeks to the point where Israel's saying whatever aid anybody wants to bring in, we are ready to process it. There's much more aid available than the various organizations have been able to distribute, including the UN. I can't imagine, but, you know, we'll wait to see. The court would probably not accede to a petition that says unfettered access to everywhere for people, because the danger would be that that would lead to the death of people, which the petitioners presumably would not want either. So I don't know how the court will rule, but Israel's argument is that there is more aid than is being distributed, and as much aid as anyone wants to bring, Israel is ready to process, has processed, and so on.
Also today, President Biden is meant to speak with Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. And of course, the world waits to hear what will come out of this conversation after Biden was so, so critical of Israel right directly after the accident. And also in the background, we're hearing that the U.S. is set to oppose a motion for a Palestinian statehood in the UN later in the month. Do you put these two things together? Do you think we can at this point?
Well, President Biden has been, extremely critical of Israel's prosecution of the war in general of late, and maybe not even only of late. And an incident like this, of course, would engender and has engendered more such criticism from him. You know, the relationship, the personal relationship between Biden and Netanyahu is very poor at the moment. You have an administration that is openly saying we must not conflate the government of Israel, which Biden has made clear he thinks is incredibly problematic, and the security of Israel. I think there's a concern in Israel that the hostility to Netanyahu and Netanyahu's open fighting with the administration is having implications that go to the essence of the security of Israel. I'm sure the administration would disagree with that. And many Israelis, myself included, would note, for example, that the U.S. did not veto a U.N. resolution late last month, which did not condition a short-term ceasefire leading to a permanent ceasefire, potentially, on the release of the hostages. Now, the Americans, I think, were somewhat disingenuous in arguing that this did not mark a change in policy, that they didn't veto this resolution. I don't think that's true. I think it was a change in policy. Do I think that they're now going to not veto motions providing the Palestinians with a state? I don't think we've reached that point yet. And I think it's credible if the Americans say they're not going to let this go through. I think we should be prepared to think that indeed will be the case. but things are moving in bad directions in all of these tracks.
The IDF said yesterday that it has bolstered its air defense array and has called up reservists. And today we hear that the IDF has canceled home leave for all combat troops as the country prepares for a potential Iranian response to a strike in Syria that also occurred on Monday, in which several high-ranking Iranian military officials were killed. David, what are you hearing?
Well, Israel allegedly targeted the Iranian embassy compound in Damascus, and specifically several leading members of the Iranian Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps, which is a U.S.-designated terrorist organization. I stress this because these are not sort of nice, I don't know how much of the international community is describing them, you know, senior military officials and generals. You know, they're the head of an organization that is engaged in terrorism. And there were some pretty serious senior people who were targeted. The Iranians are angry and issuing threats from the very top of the Iranian hierarchy. And Israel is braced. I don't think Israel knows exactly how Iran will respond, but we've had a situation in the last few hours, as far as I know, in which GPS in Israel, Waze and so on, is being scrambled by Israel, apparently because this might complicate any Iranian response. It may well be that by the time people are listening to this, some more definitive information and even developments may have happened, but I don't remember a precedent for that. There may be one.
Well, I'm not sure if it's unprecedented, David, because since basically the beginning of the war, October 7th, in Haifa and other northern parts of the country, we've had the scrambling already.
Right. So I think the difference is the extent. And, you know, you could be driving from Jerusalem to Tel Aviv this morning and you'd be being told that you were in Beirut. And I don't think we've had that before in sort of central Israel. For sure, the north has had all kinds of stuff like that. And I think that, the you know, you can draw the conclusion about where Israel now thinks threats might come, whether it would be more deeply from the north or from the east. So it's, you know, it's slightly more troubling, shall we say, than the pretty troubling norm that had applied in the north before.
Let's go to a short break. And we're back. Speaking domestically, yesterday for the first time, coalition member and war cabinet minister Benny Gantz called for Israel to hold early elections by September. This comes on the heels of a four-day marathon demonstration across from the Knesset. And I believe that the opposition leader is in very, very strong support of the elections, but he would say they need to happen now. What are you hearing?
Yeah, so Yair Lapid indeed said 6 months is too long. Gantz is saying he wants elections by September by consensus. He wants to be able to agree a date because people need to have their trust restored in the political leadership and make choices in the wake of everything that's happened in the last 6 months. The Likud has dismissed this as not in Israel's interest. That's been Netanyahu's position for several months when he's been asked about this. It's exactly what Hamas wants. Israel tearing itself in a protracted election campaign, paralysis for 6 to 8 months, as he put it in the last press conference. So you have the most popular politician in Israel at the moment, Benny Gantz, trying to set in motion a process which I assume he thinks or hopes would see him elected, and the duly elected prime minister bitterly opposed. I don't know how this is going to play out. There's a belief that Gantz might pull his National Unity Party out of the coalition when the Knesset, and we'll come to this in a second, returns from its recess. What did you say, David? Anyway, we'll come to that. So Gantz may be, you know, on the way out, but that doesn't bring down the government. They'd still have 64 seats in the Knesset. I think the interesting person to look at would be Yoav Gallant, who's been fired once before, the defense minister from the Likud party, very opposed to how Netanyahu is not handling draft of Haredi Israelis. Netanyahu has not been prepared to substantively begin a process under which the blanket exclusion from military or national service of ultra-Orthodox and much of the Arab community would change, and Gallant is pretty opposed to that. So the government doesn't fall unless somebody in that 64 wants it to fall. You know, are the ultra-Orthodox parties going to pull out when no other coalition would be easier for them? I don't think so. Might some in the Likud think that the time has come and maybe that loyalty to Netanyahu has been stretched beyond a reasonable limit? I think that would be what would be interesting to look for.
David, what do you see as the tipping point for Gantz, though? It kind of, to me, came out of the blue.
Look, he's presenting himself as the unifier, the consensus builder, the statesman-like politician, in contrast to the divisive Netanyahu. And he's presented his presence in the coalition, which he joined a few days after October the 7th, as preventing an otherwise hard-right, ultra-Orthodox Netanyahu team from doing things that would be even worse for Israel. I think he will be telling the public, if he goes ahead with this, that he hasn't been able to maintain the influence that he wants, that dangerous things are at foot. And therefore, whereas he believed the national interest was served by him being in the coalition, he's concluded that it is no longer the case, that it's actually harming Israel, because in some way he's propping up this government. We need new elections. We need the electorate to have the opportunity again to weigh in. You know, if you're trying to work out, you know, what might have moved him to do that, one thing might be that he had an alliance with a former Likud Knesset member named Gideon Saar. All of this we've discussed before on the podcast and so on. So Saar pulled out of the coalition. So Gantz may feel that there's a risk that Saar will be sort of taking votes from his part of the spectrum, the sort of, Saar is a little to his political right, but the statesman-like, responsible, not center-left, shall we say, and therefore Gantz maybe wants to reassert ownership of that. But it's, you know, I don't. You know, he's calling for elections in 6 months. The assessment is he might bolt the government in 2-3 months if things don't work out. So it's not as though, I don't see this as tomorrow, so he's going to do something dramatic. And again, I would look to the forces within the pre-war coalition, and especially the Likud itself, if you're trying to work out whether that 64-56 majority, the core majority, if you like, is going to collapse.
So as mentioned, the Knesset is going on recess today, but not all of its members wanted to take vacation. And opposition leader Yair Lapid told our political reporter Sam Sokol, "We have no recess for the people who are fighting in Gaza. Why should the Knesset go on vacation at times like this?" How prevalent do you think that Lapid's position is right now?
I don't know. I mean, there's a cynical argument to be made that says this is such a spectacularly dysfunctional government that, you know, the less work they do, the better. I think that's a flip. And having just said it, you know, it's not a responsible way of thinking. And neither is taking a recess for 6 weeks at the height of a war with the economy in real trouble, with people under incredible strain. Neither is that a responsible way of operating. You would think that even if you were the most cynical politician and wanted people to not think that you were a waste of their time, support, and loyalty, you would pretend at least to try to be doing your work, and you would not go on holiday for... I mean, I don't even have the words. Some committees are apparently going to meet, but of course, it sends the wrong signal. But more than that, there's a country to run in a war. You're the elected representatives of the country. How dare you go off on a six-week break as though nothing was happening? Think of everything we discuss in these podcasts, everything that's going on in Israel. It's beyond comprehension, like too many things are of late.
David, thank you, as usual, for your updates and insights.
Thank you, Amanda.
Thanks for listening to the Times of Israel's Daily Briefing. Please check out another installment tomorrow. This episode was produced by the Podwaves. If you have any questions or comments about this or any other episode, please drop us an email to podcast@timesofisrael.com. Until tomorrow, shalom.